Hello, I am Barbara Stepani, Director of the Trefney Honors Program at Red Rocks Community College. I have been working with my students to develop an understanding of the issues involved in ecosystem health, urban green spaces, water quality and conservation, and the effects of climate change. Today, I am visiting the Mount Air Park Community Farm, one of the Sprout City Farms locations in Denver, Colorado. On this cool fall morning, I am with Noelle Trueheart. Noelle is the Mount Air Park Community Farm Manager. Thank you for speaking with me today, Noelle.
Thank you for being here.
So, Noelle, tell me, how did you get involved with Sprout City Farms?
Well, I moved back to Colorado from South Dakota in 2018, the beginning of 2018. I'd had several years of farming under my belt at that point, and was looking for ways to get involved with the farming scene in Denver. I moved back here to have my daughter and to be near family, and I really wanted to plug into the farming scene. I didn't really know what was going on in Denver as far as local foods and urban farming went. It wasn't really a part of my scene when I left Denver 6 years prior to that. So everybody I talked to, all the networking I did, everybody said, have you checked Sprout City Farms? Have you heard of Sprout City Farms? How about Sprout City Farms? Have you talked to those guys? And so it sort of became a pattern of, okay, well, their mission really aligns with a lot of the things that I'm really interested in, farming, food access, food education, all the above. So I got in touch with Meg Cayley, the founder of Sprout City Farms, and yeah, the rest is history, I guess. This is my first season managing the farm here, so
awesome. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about your educational path and how that led you to be doing what you're doing?
Absolutely. So I, like most farmers, did not go to school for farming or horticulture or anything like that, ag. Most of the farmers I know ended up farming kind of by accident, and I'm definitely one of those people too. My first degree was from the University of Denver in anthropology, with a focus in archaeology and French language and literature. So, you know, like you
do. Yeah, and really helpful for farming.
You know, farming never occurred to me for a long time, but I was a field archaeologist for 5 years. And then I guess one summer I started volunteering on a farm and orchard on the Western Slope called White Buffalo Farm in Paonia, Colorado. It was sort of by accident that I even ended up there. I thought, well, this looks like fun. It's a peach orchard. Learn more about that. Eat some peaches. Go camping. Sounds good. And they had a small vegetable CSA at that farm, too. And it was on one of my breaks from archaeology. I had every other week on, every other week off. And so it really opened up, you know, time for me to volunteer. And I spent one of my breaks there, and I was totally hooked. And within a couple times of volunteering at this farm in CSA, I told myself, I have to know everything about this. And I formed a plan to quit my first career in archaeology for farming. Side note, you'd actually be surprised. There are a lot of archaeologists who've actually become farmers.
That's interesting.
Yes. But it's also not that surprising.
Right.
A lot of my former colleagues in archaeology have become farmers, organic vegetable farmers. I mean, when you think about it, it's like an earthy science.
Yep.
It's very intertwined with like human history and human patterns. And it's a dirt thing, man. Like, I think none of us farmers or archaeologists ever really got over our sandbox phase in our childhood. So, you know, they really go hand in hand. Archaeology is digging up the past, but the way I think about farming is, you know, digging for the future. So, that's sort of how I ended up as a farmer. I did quit archaeology, took a pay cut by half to become a farmer, didn't care at all because I was so fulfilled and I was eating like royalty, essentially. So I started farming kind of all over the United States. And after a certain point, I thought, you know, I feel a deep obligation to share this gift with people. It's such a privilege to know good food and know how to grow it and know where it comes from. I want to go back for an education degree. So then I went to the South Dakota State University and I pursued a degree in education, K-12. But really, I just wanted a piece of paper that said I could teach people stuff because I want to ultimately educate folks where their food comes from, how to farm, how to grow, how to empower yourself, you know, all part of the food revolution. So, and that's, yeah, all contributed to where I am now. Sprout City Farms does a lot with educational initiatives, so it's a really good fit.
Great. Tell me a little bit about your work with the Standing Rock and Pine Ridge Reservation communities.
Absolutely. So I worked for a program in South Dakota whose mission was to implement educational and community gardens and farms on reservations. Part of a funding through a CDC project to eliminate diabetes. So that's cool. That's where the funding came from. The projects themselves, I guess innately, they were perhaps a little bit flawed given the context. A lot of what they wanted to do was implement gardens, much like the farm that we have here, the vegetables that we grow here in Native communities across reservations. And generally, to be honest, there was not a lot of interest in these farms and gardens, not a lot of participation, not a lot of interest in the harvest even. And that just goes to show, I think, that these sort of projects really need to be asked for by the community. They need to have ownership by the community. And the only way they can be for the community is if they're from the community. So, you know, I think what most people asked for when they came around the gardens on the reservations were three things: onions, hot peppers, and Hubbard squash. That's really all they wanted. So really, that's all we should have planted: onions, hot peppers, and Hubbard squash. But we planted a little bit of everything, you know. Eat these, they're delicious, they're healthy, and for the most part, there was, like I said, just not a ton of participation. Although it was very rewarding work in the end. That was a pretty big lesson. I think, you know, there's a lot of work being done with food sovereignty in these communities, and I don't necessarily think that community gardens and farms is the way to do that. It's not always culturally relevant. I think that's the key to any sort of farm project, is it has to fit the community like a glove. It has to be culturally relevant in every way. So I think maybe the focus to food sovereignty things in these communities will deal more with going back to traditional foods, because there is a lot of interest there. You still see people out in June digging up wild turnips. You know, you see people way out in the middle of nowhere with buckets filling them up with choke cherries and wild plums. I mean, these are the traditional foods that really matter to people. So there's definitely been some steps in that direction for Native food sovereignty going back to traditional food. But again, you know, it's trial and error, but it's mostly listening to the community. And I think that's where Sprout City Farms really succeeds, is with this farm specifically, at Mount Air Park Community Farm. Back in 2014, these dilapidated old basketball courts and tennis courts needed a facelift, and they asked the community, what do you want to see happen here? And they specifically asked for a place with more fresh food, which in this instance is a farm. So it worked out great.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So how did that work influence your work here at with Sprout City Farms?
I think just coming in with a background that it needed to be from within the community, it needed to be from the community in their best interest. I think I knew to grow, both to cultivate what the community wanted and to participate in the way that the community could relate. So one of the things that Sprout City Farms does is they go door to door. They do, we have a programs manager who ask people, you know, they're bilingual, they come through and they do surveys of what foods do you eat? You know, what do you feed your family? What can we grow for you? You know, there's a farm right there, right?
That's awesome.
So I think door-to-door is great. That's definitely contributed. We do a lot of different community things. We host community events, and we always strike up those conversations with people. We have like a big in an urban farm fest in the fall, and we have like a urban farm fiesta in the spring to sort of kick off the season. And we invite the community. We have like free food and activities for kids and things like that. And it's just to bring people. It's kind of tucked away, the park, or I guess it's tucked away in a corner of the park that not a lot of people see. So We have to really invite people a lot. We want community participation. Any passersby, we try to engage with. And then we have a donation-based farm stand on Saturdays from August through October. Pay what you can, basically. We have it in a really visible spot in the upper parking lot of Mount Air Park so that people as they're driving by can sort of slam on their brakes and buy vegetables, you know. But I guess also we did some research on the community and the demographics, and this is the Two Creeks neighborhood is typically, give or take about 40% Latino. With knowing a little bit about Latino food, cuisine, I guess, I tried to grow a lot of what was in that interest. So we grew 2 full 70-foot beds of tomatillo, a lot of hot peppers. We saw a lot of interest in those items. So really excited that we did that.
And then I'm sure that helps inform what you're going to grow next year.
Absolutely.
In terms of what people were interested in.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So why is it so important for communities like this one to have a community farm?
I guess a lot of reasons. I'm not sure that this community specifically qualifies as a food desert, but I know there's not significant food access here. I think it's, food desert has to be outside of 2 miles. But I think...
In addition to food access, what else is important?
I think that the fact that this is in such an urban setting is really important. You don't see a whole lot of urban farms, especially at this scale. Ours is about 1.5 acres, all told. And I think that's huge as far as educating a community about food and where it comes from goes. First of all, one of the missions of Sprout City Farms is to provide education to budding farmers, and we want to root more farmers in the city, because ultimately more farms in the city means more food access for more neighborhoods. So our internship program is such that the interns who come to us have an interest in farming or food access, food ag on any sort of level, but they live in a city, so where are they supposed to learn how to farm without moving to the country? That's not practical for most people's lives. So our interns, we're educating interns how to farm, the basics, everything. They just dive right in. So our internship program is great for that. Also, the fact that it's in an urban setting means that we can invite so many people here and they don't have to travel very far. So we have a lot of different school groups come. We have college groups. We have K-12. We had a Head Start group come a couple weeks ago, 3- and 4-year-olds.
Oh, wow.
And, but still, all ages, a lot of people in the city have never been to a farm before, specifically a vegetable farm. So it's great for people to, be able to see where their food comes from, see the kind of plant, be able to understand what goes into it, how much love and blood, sweat, and tears goes into growing food. It gives people a much better appreciation, gets people thinking more locally, on a hyper-local level, gets people thinking about food miles and buying responsibly, all of the above, just from coming to a farm that's in the city. So it's really a wonderful location for a farm. And one of the things Sprout City Farms wants to do is create more urban farm sites where we can host this kind of wonderful thing. Also, one more thing I want to say is that just an urban farm in general, it just adds vitality to any community. Anywhere where there's fresh food, a quiet green space, it's like a safe and just happy, colorful place to hang out. So there's a lot of good reasons to have an urban farm specifically right here.
What do you see as the future of urban farming?
Oof, that's such a big question. urban farming is headed in a lot of different exciting directions right now, I think. I think this is much more on people's radar now than it was even 10 years ago, when Sprout City Farm started. And I think there's more youth engaged. There's more school gardens and things like that that are starting to get people thinking about where food comes from. So I think we're headed in the right direction in a lot of ways, but there are a lot of new innovations for sure in urban farming, and a lot of them we're seeing in Denver too. Aquaponics is a huge one. There's a lot of aquaponic greenhouses where essentially, you probably have a better explanation for
than
I do.
We have one on our campus, actually. Yeah. So you're feeding the fish, and the fish are feeding the plants.
Yep. And then you're also feeding fish and plants to the community.
Yes, exactly.
Essentially. So it's highly sustainable, and it can be done in a small space. And we've seen an influx of freight farms in the Denver area, too, in the last couple of years, even. It's essentially a farm inside a shipping container. From what I understand, it's essentially vertical hydroponic farming, mostly for greens, lettuce, things like that, which are very healthy. But you can grow in it year-round. From what I understand, you can grow up to 2 acres.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
2 acres worth of greens inside a single shipping container.
That's crazy.
So from what I know there's at least 4 in Denver right now, but I'm sure there's a lot more on the way. But when you think about space in an urban setting, I mean, you can park one in a parking lot and grow 2 acres of vegetables inside a parking lot, taking up 4 parking spaces. So there's a lot of stuff like that going on that's very exciting. It's greatly suited for a lot of people. Not for me. I'm a dirt farmer, always and forever, I think. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for urban farms with dirt farming, too. I think, you know, once you start thinking about it, you'll start to see the empty lots in your neighborhood and think, what could we do with this space? All we need is a soil test and, you know, a bunch of people to rally for this, and we can create a farm space here or a garden. There can be, you can grow so much food in such a small amount of space. I can't stress that enough. And there's so many lots that are not being used. Or that, you know, might get a corner store put on them or something like that. But if we want more fresh food in our communities, it's a pretty simple thing to do. Get your community behind a project idea. Go to your city council. Go to your city meetings. Go to your neighborhood meetings. Everything. You can make urban farming happen anywhere you want it to happen. There's plenty of opportunities for it. You can even rope in an organization like Sprout City Farms. You know, we're experts at kind of swooping in and putting urban farms where people ask for them. So there's a lot of opportunities to see a lot more farming happen in urban settings. And honestly, like, every single little garden, every single farm that pops up, no matter how small it is, it's still a really big part of this food revolution, you know, going back to the real food, you know, not the processed stuff, knowing where it comes from, you know, not letting 40,000 food miles of Ritz crackers or whatever end up.
Yeah. Well, it's the ultimate in eating local.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of, you know, we have a lot of good farmers markets in Denver, but there's a lot of small CSAs. CSAs, community supported agriculture. I think some people are even doing it, you know, with insurance, of course, out of their backyards even. I know a family doing it. They have 10 CSA members out of their backyard garden.
Wow.
So essentially CSA is where folks buy a farm share at the beginning of a season, and they pledge to come pick up a box of whatever's in season, vegetable-wise, for 18 or 20 weeks, however long the growing season goes. And that really gets people engaged in where their food comes from, eating locally. It's a sustainable model for farmers as well. So look for CSA in your neighborhood. There's plenty of them around here. Start a CSA if you want. There's a lot of opportunity, and we have to take the opportunities where we can, because it's all part of a greater thing.
Well, that's inspiring, and hopefully it will inspire others to get in there and either grow food or be a part of growing food.
Absolutely.
And supporting this, because I agree with you. I think this is the future of food.
So, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking me.
All right. Thanks.